I'm Kim Singletary.
And I'm Rich Collins.
And you're listening to Biz Talks,
a weekly conversation with local business leaders about topics affecting New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana. Hello, everyone. I'm Rich Collins. On April 14th, the New Orleans Women and Children's Shelter officially cut the ribbon on a new home in Mid-City. The new location will allow the shelter to grow its services for homeless families in the metro area and double its sheltering capacity. On this week's podcast, we're happy to welcome CEO Dawn Bradley Fletcher, who will share with us why the move is pivotal to the city's fight to break the cycle of homelessness. Dawn Bradley Fletcher, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me today.
To start off,
I'm glad to be here.
We're really glad to talk to you. And to start off, can you explain to us all about what you do at the shelter?
Okay, so first of all, my responsibility is to oversee the daily operations, the day-to-day operations of the shelter. We are currently the largest facility in the New Orleans area serving intact families. There are many shelters serving women and children. However, we're the only shelter that serves intact families. We are in our 18th year of operations. Our goal is to make sure that we're assessing our residents' needs to the point where they're never homeless again. So our job is to make sure we're ending their homelessness.
Yeah, it's an interesting detail because you're trying to provide services while also creating a situation where people don't need the service anymore.
Right. And one of the significant qualities of the New Orleans Women and Children Shelter is we don't focus on just being a shelter. We consider ourselves more than just a shelter because we're providing a foundation for rebuilding lives and fostering growth and the well-being of our residents. And we have so many programs to support that. When our families come into shelter, they are immediately They go into a case management program where we complete assessments and we make sure that we're tracking what their needs are, what are the barriers that cause their homelessness. And then from there, we link them into resources that can help them overcome those barriers. We also have programs to support employment, education. We have a transition assistance program. I don't want to ramble, but you know, these pieces are very important because when you talk about ending homelessness, we need to talk about the things that we're doing to lead up to that. And one of the most important programs to me is just case management as a whole and the transition assistance piece, because when our families move into their own home, we don't just drop them off at the door and say, hey, you're on your own here. We make sure that we are still a support system and we're there to pick them up if they are, you know, falling again. We want to make sure that they never fall back into homelessness. So that means we need to be by their side. And that program generally runs about 18 months, but we have families that, you know, never leave because, you know, they enjoy having someone who care about their well-being and, you know, just helping them get through hard times.
Now, I want to ask you about the intact families. Why are you the only one that provides that service? Is it more complicated in some ways, or is there not enough need to have more than one? What's the reason?
You know, I'm going to be honest, I never understood the rules regarding families. When we opened the very first shelter after Katrina, I was the first employee. One of the rules, you couldn't accept boys over 12. And I think it was just a standard rule across shelter systems. So for me, you know, I went along with it for a while, but when it became a problem, I mean, and I have to share this story because I showed up for work one day and one of our moms was standing on the curb with all of her stuff and she was crying. And I'm like, oh my God, what's wrong? She said, well, I can't stay anymore because my son, he's being removed from my aunt's house. So I don't know where he's going to go. I was like, wait a minute, get your things, come back in, and we're going to figure this out. It was at that moment for me personally, I felt, you know, these rules are just too strict. They don't make sense. We're breaking up families. Why? And I think ultimately, it was just a standard rule across the board. Boys over 12 could not come into shelter. So I immediately called the founder, who was the director at the time, and I said, hey, we have a problem. And I'm going to tell you, we had a rule where we allowed moms to bring their kids in. We had visitors. So if the kids didn't stay there, they can still come and visit. So I'm saying that to say we knew this kid. We knew he was a good kid. So I talked to my founder at the time. I said, this rule doesn't make sense. You know, we're breaking up a mom and a kid. So it was at that moment we changed our rule. We didn't have an age limit on boys. And as we grew, we realized, you know, the more important picture, some of our families, there is a male in the household. And some, you know, sometimes the male is the head of the household and we have an absent mother. So then our focus became keeping families together. Now, there are facilities in the city where dad can go here, mom and kids can go over there. But that to me is breaking up a home. How do you face overcoming homelessness when you have split your family? You're now dealing with this separately. So it just did not fit for us. So I've been, you know, known as a rule breaker. And I'm actually proud of it because, hey, we're breaking rules for a good cause.
Understood. Well, can you talk a little bit about how you got involved in this work? What was your background?
Oh,
how did you do this work?
Wow. So that is a very interesting story. So I'm going to tell you, and I'll try to be as short as possible. So for me, I feel like I was being prepared for this job long before I knew it. My oldest son, who's 30 now, he was about 2 years old. I got a job at the Children's Hospital, and I ended up in the pediatric AIDS program. I didn't realize that's where my placement would be. Long story short, I worked under a team of social workers, mental health specialists. These were people who were focusing on dealing with HIV and AIDS, and of course, all the other issues, education, employment. So I learned so much how to work with people, client sensitivity, you know, how do you deal with, you know, moms who are dealing with not just homelessness, but HIV and AIDS and substance abuse. So a lot of training, and I considered myself, and this is me looking back on it, because of course, at the time, I didn't see it this way, but thinking, you know, back then, I was a sponge and I was soaking up a lot of information. So let's fast forward. I ended up leaving that job after 12 years. I considered myself retired. And it was just, you know, at the time we were dealing with a lot of death and dying and being young. I couldn't deal with that part of it anymore. Mm-hmm. So I went on to work at Travelers Aid Society, helping homeless men find jobs. And that job was very rewarding. And then Hurricane Katrina came and we were all displaced. And, you know, I came back to New Orleans and we were still working at Travelers Aid. I decided I didn't want to do this anymore. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to do what I went to school for, which was business administration. I always wanted to own my own business. So I opened my own business and I was like, okay, I'll do this and I'll volunteer elsewhere. And I got a call from a friend who said, Dawn, there's a couple. They opened a shelter. They are looking for someone to help them professionalize it. I said, okay, no problem. I'll help them. Well, Rich, I actually had 7 interviews and I thought, you know what? This is not a volunteer opportunity. This is a job. And not only that, I want to be a part of this. And I felt like, you know, I was the perfect person at the time. And I feel like my founders, who, you know, were part of this lengthy interview process, felt the same way. So that's how I got involved. I mean, from day one, I just hit the ground running really hard. And here we are.
That's amazing. So it sounds like you've got a lot of empathy and a lot of the ability to relate to people in all sorts of difficult circumstances.
I do. And I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but I think, you know, just, you know, growing up I was always that person in the family who cared about others. You know, you had your, you know, other family members were getting reprimanded for something and you were like, oh my God, you know, why did it have to be that way? Why did it have to be punished? I was always the one who wanted to help in any and every capacity, you know. And I always tell this story, you know, I used to get in trouble for giving my stuff away. I remember, you know, I had this beautiful purple radio and it was a birthday present for me, but I was at a friend's house, you know, we would spend weekends together and she didn't have a radio or a television. So, hey, I loaned it to her. And when I did get it back, my mom was like, look at it. It's been abused.
Oh.
And I was like, it didn't matter to me that it came back in not the greatest condition. She didn't have a radio. So anyway, I think it's just naturally, you know, a part of who I am. And I also think, I'm not going to say I think, I strongly believe when you are doing this work, you know, it takes a special kind of person to work with people who are in need. And I stress all the time, like not just myself, but my team and the founders and the board members, they care. And that four-letter word is so important when you are working with homeless families and especially children, because they're innocent in all of this. They didn't say, Mom, I want to be homeless, you know, or, you know, they are the innocent party in this. So to me, when you care about people and you care about the work that you're doing, it's so easy, you know, to carry out the work and just have the great income outcomes that we have. So I'm proud and happy to be a part of the New Orleans Women and Children Shelter. I will say that.
Well, I think we're all lucky to have you in that role. Now, I'm going to ask you several questions, but I realize that I got to be mindful of your time. So I'll try and not throw too many at you. But I am curious, what is a day at the shelter like? And are there certain seasons that are much busier than other seasons? What's the rhythm of the life over there?
Well, that's a very good question because it does change day to day, but we're just like any average household. So when you wake up in the morning, you have, you know, people who are eating breakfast, kids coming down, getting ready for school. So it's a simple things like that, washing laundry, just the day to day things you would do at home. All of that is happening in shelter. And then with our residents, of course, we have education and employment programs, so kids go to school, mom, dad may go to work or participate in our programming. It's the same as what you would see at home. Kids playing in the yard, you know, moms and dads doing chores around the shelter. And then, of course, participating in the active programming, working with their case managers, things like that. So and that happens from sunup to sundown because you're talking about 60 people at any given time in one facility.
It tops out at 60 now, but you say you're probably going to get closer to 100 soon. Is that what it is?
Yes. The new facility, that's the significance of the new facility. We're able to serve at minimum 100 people. I actually counted a little more, but, you know, not to be overcrowded, we're going to keep it at a capacity of about 100 for now, which, you know, that's significant for us because, you know, it doubles our capacity. And there, you know, there's certainly a need.
And then what is the staff size? Just how does that fluctuate?
So right now I have a staff of 24. We do provide 24-hour coverage at the shelter. So I have about 10 folks who are on the administrative team and then 14 people who are, I think it's about 12 because two others are kind of doing something else, who are in residential services just to make sure that we're staffed 24 hours. And, you know, that's a team. We have a chef, we have resident coordinators, case managers. We have a pretty big team considering where we came from. Because, you know, as I stated, when I started, I was the first employee. And at that time, we were only able to serve 20 people at any given time.
Right.
And we moved to our second location. We doubled our size to 40. We did a small expansion there. And then we doubled, we added on 20 more folks. And now we're at 100. So this is just remarkable for us.
Yeah, if we could, let's talk real quick about your new location. That was the reason we were chatting. And then, but also remind us, where were you before? Where did you just move from?
So we were in Central City, that's on South Liberty Street. And that facility was originally a shelter built in 1998 for pregnant teen moms between the ages of 16 and 24. We took over that building in 2014. Yes.
Now, is that what's going to happen with that building? Do you know?
I don't know. I mean, we don't own the building, and that's, you know, another significant milestone for us. We were able to purchase this facility.
Nice.
You know, that's a great space. We spent, you know, a lot of years there. We have a lot of memories, you know, and transformations with our families. But, you know, it's time to move on to bigger and better. To, you know, when you think about serving families in our new space, we now have bathrooms in every bedroom. We have rooms that are private. So it's a difference when you compare the location. So, you know, the physical space here will be more accommodating for our family. So we're happy that we've transitioned to a new facility.
Absolutely. Now, your people told me it was a former hotel. Is that right?
Yes. Imagine that. Yes. So it was a former hotel, and they actually did a lot of renovations prior to us purchasing the facility. So everything is, I want to use the word immaculate, because, nice. You know, yeah, there's not a lot of maintenance we need to do, or I should say remodeling or rehabbing coming in. The only thing, we did have a playground put in. We were awarded a grant through Republic Services, and they partnered with Rebuilding Together, NOLA, and She Builds to put in a play yard. So we have this beautiful play area for the kids. And we also are working with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They're putting in a kitchen.
Oh,
aside
great.
From that, yes. Aside from those two things, you know, the place is beautiful. So, you know, those two additions, it just brings it all together.
Now, was it renovated for you? Like, that was it was renovated and brought up to date specifically for you, or was it already being renovated and then you purchased it?
No, I think they had some renovations done to support their work as a hotel. And, you know, whatever happened, you know, whatever reason they decided to close, we were, I say, lucky, because, you know, this opportunity came out of nowhere. We did not plan to purchase a facility. Let's put it like this. It was definitely a part of our future planning, but our goal was to fundraise first.
Yeah.
But this opportunity came and we just jumped all over it. And so we were lucky.
And can we say where the building is? Is that
we can. So we're at 2625 Iberville. It's formerly the Lucky Inn Hotel. I feel like that's a popular hotel in New Orleans. When I say the Lucky Inn, folks are like, I know where that is.
Cute name. Wait, is that, I'm trying to think, is that near between Broad and Jeff Davis? Where is that?
See what I mean? Yes, it is. It's actually not Broad and Jeff Davis, but Broad and what's the other street? Is it
Alvin? Is it going downwards?
No, it's Dirgemoir.
Okay.
And Broad. That's the, and Canal. So Canal, Dirgemoir, Broad, and Bienville. We're in that little circumference.
That's great. That's a good spot. Okay, so hey, I'm curious. You already talked about what goes on at the shelter. Are there misconceptions about what happens at a homeless shelter like yours? Like, are there things that people get wrong?
Oh, all the time. First of all, coming into a shelter, I think people have this notion that they're going to be sleeping in one room with 50 people.
Yeah.
When that's not the case. I also think, you know, people have this misconception that it's a setup for failure. You know, not realizing, you know, our shelter especially, we offer a hand up. We have a ton of services and resources to support ending homelessness. It's not a dead end. You're not coming here for a temporary bed. Our goal is to offer you a home style environment, a home like setting, and not, we don't want our families to think about homelessness. We want you to think about, you know, the road ahead, overcoming this challenge, right? So when our families move into shelter, we immediately start the process of getting in their head. This is your home. It may be temporary. It may not look how you want home to look, but you're going to have everything that you need here, including resources, a support system. And we're going to we're going to do our best to make sure that you move on to independent living. So not thinking about homelessness while you're here. So that's one of the biggest misconceptions, coming into a facility thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to come here and it's still up to me to get myself together, find housing. No, we have someone here who can assist you with all of that. And it's not a dead end. This is actually a new beginning,
It literally sounds like a godsend for people. And then I'm curious, have you had people that have been former residents that have come back to help?
Let me tell you, we have a lot. So, and you asked, like, what's the day in a life at shelter? So one of the things we do, we make sure we focus on celebrating holidays, celebrating birthdays, because we want our families to feel a sense of normalcy. What would you do if you were at home on Christmas Day? You would open presents. So we have lots of activities throughout the year. So we always get former residents who come back and participate in those activities. Of course, we have families who are welcome to actually be a part of it, but then there's always the volunteers. You know, we have former residents who volunteer. And coming back, I don't even know how to comment on that, because they come back to visit, they come back to tell their stories. And we put out a call and say, hey, we're having a picnic. You know, would you like to come? They're coming. If we say we need help, like cleaning the shelter, it doesn't matter. They're coming back. So the answer to that question is absolutely yes.
Awesome. All right. I'm going to give two more questions to you, because I'm being mindful of our time. Homelessness is obviously a massive problem that we can't solve on this call, but I am curious. There's a lot of other organizations in New Orleans that are working on the same problem. And what kind of coordination and communication happens between all these different groups?
So when families are at the first point of homelessness, our families call Unity of Greater New Orleans, right? They manage what we call the coordinated entry system. And that system is designed to place families, individuals, where they need to, like the best fit for their family, right? If it's an individual, they may go to Salvation Army. If it's a family, they'll either come here or another family shelter, depending on the dynamics. But that first call, they do their assessment. There are some diversion techniques that happen there, because a lot of times, you know, someone may just need help with a deposit, or, you know, they're behind on their rent. So if they can solve the problem at that point, it happens there. If not, then the referral is made into shelter. And from there, we begin the process of working together as a community, right? Because, you know, yes, we're providing shelter, we're providing all these wraparound services, but we still work with other agencies to make sure we're meeting the needs of that client. We also participate in the HMIS system, which is the Homeless Management Information System. And anyone who's working with that family, they'll be able to tell that they're in our program. They can, you know, see that from the system, and then we can see the works that's being done amongst the agencies. But I will say, we depend on our community resources, and we work very closely with our partners. But when I say we are more than just a shelter, we try to solve and handle problems within our facility amongst our staff and create our own resources.
Understood. So it sounds like the answer is there's a lot of coordination that goes on with all these different groups, but you also have to learn to be self-reliant and solve problems yourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. My last question is, you know, you've made this big move. Here we are in New Orleans, where, you know, there's obviously a visible problem that the whole city knows about. What's your next thing on your wish list, and what makes you hopeful about this problem in the coming years?
So, well, it's a hard and an easy question, because five thoughts just went through my head. So the first thing that comes to mind is I want to make sure that we're continuing to maintain the excellent return to homelessness rate that we're maintaining. Right now, less than 2% of our families are returning to homelessness. So our goal going forward, and as we look ahead, is to make sure that in the next, and I said this on Saturday for our ribbon cutting, as we look forward to the next 18 years, we want to serve 7,500 more individuals, and at least 5,000 of them we're estimating to be kids. And I want to believe that we will continue this fight of homelessness and maintain our 2% or less return to homelessness rate. Because that statistic for me is huge to say, you know, we've housed all these families and they're maintaining their housing, because again, that is our ultimate goal, to end their homelessness. So that's my hope, that's my dream. And to me, that means that we're fighting this fight and we're winning. If we can continue to help families in homelessness, that's the goal.
How can people help? What's the best way for people to get in touch and help?
Oh, that's a great question. So they can certainly reach out. We do have a website. It's www.nowcs.org. They can certainly call the shelter. I have an amazing philanthropy officer who would be more than happy to assist with anyone wanting to donate their entire life savings to support homelessness.
Yes.
Should I give my phone number for the shelter?
Absolutely.
Okay, so our phone number is 504-522-9340. We certainly accept volunteers, donations. If anyone wants to schedule a tour, you know, please call us. But financially supporting our work is, you know, that's our greatest need right now. But also Give NOLA Day is coming up. So, you know, we welcome Give NOLA Day gifts. So any way anyone wants to support the shelter, we welcome it. We welcome it. There's certainly a need. You know, we don't have a ton of, you know, government funding. You know, our shelter is funded it's a third of government funding, foundations, and individual support. And that's who really, really keep our doors open. And it's the individuals.
Well, understood. That's really good to remember for Give NOLA Day. And Dawn Bradley Fletcher, thank you so much for all you do for our community. And thanks for talking about it with us today.
You're welcome, and thank you so much, Rich, for having me.
Thanks for listening. Biz Talks is brought to you by Biz New Orleans Magazine. Follow us on social media @BizNewOrleans and visit bizneworleans.com for daily news and stories.